Chaitanyam Ramishtam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shiro Shiruta Parakamalam Shirum Vaishnavam Shirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sajivam Sarvaitam Sadhutam Praja Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakal Vidam Sha Hey Krishna Kardasana Dinabhano Jayate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostuke Kaptakanshina Gorangi Rade Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhana Sute Devi Anamavi Hare Vanchakapa Drubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Padidhanam Vabhinyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nandananda Shri Advaita Radha Jivasati Gaur Bhaktananda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 18, Prithvi Maharaj Milks the Earth Planet, text number 20. Anye
Anyena
Cha Mayina
Mayina
Maya
Maya
Antardhana
Antardhana
Adbhuta
Adbhuta
Atmana
Atmana
Maya
Maya
Prakalpya
Prakalpya
Vatsam
Vatsam
Te
Te
Duduhu
Duduhu
Dharana
Dharana
Mayim
Mayim
Anyecha
Maino Mayam
Antardhana Bhutatmanam
Antardhana Bhutatmanam
Mayam Prakapya Vatsamte
Mayam Prakapya Vatsamte
Dudupura Dharana Mayim
Dudupura Dharana Mayim
Anyecha Maino Mayam
Anyecha Maino Mayam
Bhutatmanam
Antardhana Bhutatmanam
Mayam Prakalpya Vatsamte
Mayam Prakalpya Vatsamte
Duhura Dharana Mayim
Duhura Dharana Mayim
Anyecha Maino Mayam
Anyecha Maino Mayam
Antardhana Bhutatmanam
Antardhana Bhutatmanam
Mayam prakalpya vatsante
Mayam prakalpya vatsante
Duduhur dharana mahe
Duduhur dharana mahe
Anye cha maino mayam
Anye cha maino mayam
Antardana bhutatmanam
Antardana bhutatmanam
Mayam prakalpya vatsante
Mayam prakalpya vatsante
Duduhur dharana mahim
Duduhur dharana mahim
Anye cha maino mayam
Anye cha maino mayam
Antardana bhutatmanam
Antardana bhutatmanam
Mayam prakalpya vatsamte
Mayam prakalpya vatsamte
Duduhur dharana mayim
Duduhur dharana mayim
Ladies
Anye cha maino mayam
Antardana bhutatmanam
Mayam prakalpya vatsamte
Duduhur dharana mayim
mystic powers, Antardhana disappearing.
Adbhuta, wonderful, Atmanam of the body. Maya, the demon named Maya. Prakalpya, making.
Vatsam,
the cat.
They.
Duduhu,
milked out.
Dharana,
Mayim,
proceeding from will. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada.
Others also, the inhabitants of planets known as Kim Purusha Loka, made the demon Maya into a calf, and they milked out mystic powers by which one can disappear immediately from another's vision and appear again in a different form. Please repeat. Others also, the inhabitants of the planet known as Kim Purusha Loka, made the demon Maya into a calf. And they milked out mystic powers. By which one can immediately disappear from another's vision and appear again in a different form. Purport. It is said that the inhabitants of Kim Purusha Loka can perform many wonderful mystic demonstrations. In other words, they can exhibit as many wonderful things as one can imagine. The inhabitants of this planet can do whatever they like or whatever they imagine. Such powers are also mystic powers. Possession of such mystic powers is called Ishita. The demons generally learn such mystic powers by the practice of yoga. In the Dashama Skanda, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a vivid description of how the demons appear before Krishna in various wonderful forms. For instance, Bakasura appeared before Krishna and his coward boyfriends as a gigantic crane. While present on this planet, Lord Krishna had to fight with many demons who can exhibit the wonderful mystic power of Kim Purusha Loka. Although the inhabitants of Kim Purusha Loka are naturally endowed with such powers, one can attain these powers on this planet by performing different yoga practices. So the text again. Anye chamayno mayam antardhanad bhutatmanam mayam pratkapya vatsam te duduhur dharanamayim. Others also, the inhabitants of planets known as Kim Purusha Loka, made the demon Maya into a calf, and they milked out mystic powers by which one can disappear immediately from another's vision and appear again in a different form. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristai Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Adiyokitara. To the materialists, it would sound very good that the devotees have some interest in other than just chanting Hare Krishna. But actually, if we chant Hare Krishna inoffensively, then we'll get all the mystic powers. But that's not the aim of chanting Hare Krishna, nor is it the aim of the yoga process. It's one of the side benefits. It's just like if you put an iron into a fire, then the iron will become hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it becomes just like the fire. Krishna was telling Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, nimitra matram bhavasabhasachin, just become an instrument in the fight. Tasmatvam utishti sho labhashva jitvam shatrum bhushva rajan samridam mayayavata niyatam purva eva nimitra matram bhavasabhasachin. Get up! Prepare to fight. Conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Sabasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. When we hear about mystic powers, what we're hearing about is what happens when one becomes more closely connected with Krishna's energies, especially his internal energy. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has also said, Udharad Atmanatmanam Atmanam Avasaraya Admaiva Yatmano Bandura Admaiva Ripur Atmanaha. That a person has to elevate himself by his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and its enemy as well. So generally our minds are everywhere in the universe. And therefore our experience is everything everywhere in the universe also. And our present body, as a result, living perhaps in previous bodies in Kali Yuga, is also limited because our desires and activities in the past were not concentrated. And because they were not concentrated, therefore, our experience is quite variegated and not very strong. Not very strong in the sense that we don't have intelligence which is razor-like and can penetrate into the actual mysteries of material existence. Material existence works in a systematic way. One who has vision, intelligence, he can see how to manipulate material nature in a very simple way. For instance, if we want to break a block of wood, sometimes they show that they have a block, they have two pillars, usually made out of bricks, and then they put a block of wood across the pillar, and you're supposed to break it with the side of your hand. So in the hand, it has 30% of all the bones in the body. And if you try to break it, and you don't know what you're doing, you may break 30% of your bones in your body, which would be rather unpleasant experience, especially if you have some plans to use your hands for something, like eating or other things. But if you know how to do it, you know exactly what bones to hit the block in and how to do it, what speed to hit it at, etc., then it becomes easy, just like you take a knife and you try to go through butter. It is not very difficult. If you know what you're doing, putting your hand through wood is quite simple. And indeed, those who are actually expert, you can have 20 different pieces of wood and they'll just slice through the wood. But they don't do it the way we do it, you know. Oh, God, I better be careful. Ah, it hurt. No, they just know. Without any hesitation, with some practice, of course, you want to do something more elaborate than you actually have to, for instance, with your knuckles, know the science of how your knuckles work and which ones to utilize. Otherwise, you will break your hand. But those who know the science, they can do it quite easily. But it's usually for those things it takes a little practice. But where did it come from? And who's actually doing it? It is not that we can take one part of our philosophy and then ignore it while we're examining the other part. Krishna says that actually we're not the doer. Or we could say we're not the immediate doer, or we're not doing what we think we're doing. We're one of the factors and activities. It's not that I'm not the doer, therefore I'm not responsible. I can do whatever happens, it's not my fault. It's the material nature. Blame it on the material nature. Or Krishna, who's controlling the material nature. We're one of the factors in that we have the capacity to desire. And on the basis of that desire, And Krishna is arranging the material nature according to what we deserve. Our desire is not sufficient to cause anything to happen. We may desire to fly around in the room, and it may be quite a while before we're able to do so. It doesn't matter how much we flap our hands and try to do very quickly, but it won't work because we don't know the science. Krishna is not giving us the intelligence, and therefore our desire is not sufficient. And even Krishna gives us the intelligence, he may tell us to stop flopping your hands because you're just wasting your time. If you want to really fly in a form of a human being, then you're going to have to go through the mystic process of yoga, by which the life airs are concentrated in a way that you can actually fly. The life airs are actually already moving the body, it's just that there are different types of life airs, beginning with dhyana, udana, prana, apana, samana. And if one learns how to manipulate these life airs, then he can easily fly. We're not going to give a class on that. You're going to have to pay at the airport. Although, if time goes on and things get too expensive, we may have to give a few classes. At least to pay for my own airfare. Prabhupada, one time I was in Dallas, Texas, and Prabhupada was coming in. That was one of the times I got to walk with Prabhupada down the airport holding the umbrella over his head. And when he arrived there, there was a press conference. When he arrived at the lounge where Prabhupada was having the press conference, and one reporter asked Prabhupada, "Swamiji, how did you come today?" Actually, they were asking, Prabhupada was explaining about different kinds of mystic power of traveling. And so the reporter asked Prabhupada, "How did you come?" Well, actually, first Prabhupada explained three different types of mystic of traveling. He said you can strap pigeons together, a lot of pigeons together, and you have a little cart, and you get into the cart, and the pigeons take you up into the air. The other way of flying is by mystic power. And the third way is by airplane, yantra. The reporter said, "How did you come?" The Prabhupada said, "I came by plane, just to be one with you."
American Airlines, Prabhupada said. That was the motto of American Airlines.
What was that?
Prabhupada said, "I came by American Airlines." So I was there too. And the motto of American Airlines was to be one with you. Let's become one with us. Yeah.
But, so the question is, how easy it is, for instance, to manifest these mystic powers? It is not so easy. Why? Because in order to actually concentrate, as Krishna says, that udraratmanatmanam atmanam avasaraya atmaiva yatmano rikura atmaiva yatman atmanaha. That a man must elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a person, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. When we conquer the mind, then what happens? We're actually directly in contact with Krishna. That doesn't mean that everyone who's in contact with Krishna is necessarily equally Krishna conscious. Or that one, there are different degrees of controlling or conquering the mind. Hiranyakashipu, he was able to stand on the tip of his toes for 120 years of the demigods. With his arms out raised, not eating, not sleeping. Of course, we don't know if he's sleeping or not. No one's checking on him. You couldn't tell if his eyes were closed because after a little while, the ants and the worms that are in the moss, that are eating at all his eyes, his eyeballs and the eyelids. And so you couldn't tell if he was asleep, because asleep in his bones, because that was the only thing left. But obviously his mind was quite strong, and as a result of that, the fire emanating from the top of his skull was heating up the whole universe. That was really global warming. It wasn't caused by CO2, because Hiranyakashipu wasn't breathing. In any case, obviously his mind was concentrated on one goal, and therefore Krishna because he was so concentrated, 120 years of the demigods, 6 months of our, at least, 6 of our months equals to 1 year, 1 day in the life of a demigod. So he was so concentrated, it was manifested in this display of power. In other words, Krishna reciprocated, and the body that he happened to be in, by Krishna's arrangement, through his internal nature, displayed this wonderful exhibition. That doesn't mean that somehow or another this soul, what was in the body of Hiranyakashipu, was anything different from any other soul. But his desire was concentrated, and therefore what Krishna manifested was different from what he manifests in our particular existence. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, all the mystic powers are just different degrees of association with Krishna. Our association with Krishna is through the mind, and our mind associates with Krishna according to our desire. Sometimes it associates closer in the mode of goodness, and sometimes further away in the modes of ignorance and passion. Ultimately, real association with Krishna is something transcendental. When we're engaged in transcendental activities, that's actual intimate association with Krishna. And then one gets all the mystic powers as well as transcendental awareness, transcendental realization. But here, the Kim Purushas, and Kim means what? Purusha means person. They look a little different from ordinary human beings, therefore they're called Kim Purushas. What kind of person is this? If you looked at them, you'd say, well, this is not a human being, because they have different types of heads and bodies. Like the Kim Purushas, Kim Kinaras, what kind of things are this? But they have these mystic powers because they're able to focus their mind on certain ideas, certain activities, certain powers, and therefore they achieve them. That's their desire. And Krishna awards that desire. There are lesser powers also, like the ability to hear at a distance, or see at a distance, the ability to read people's minds. These are lesser powers one can also achieve by just concentrating the mind in a certain way. And then Krishna reciprocates. But we're not supposed to be interested in these things. Although obviously, they are interested. If our present existence was everything, it would be quite boring, wouldn't it? The scientists, they're trying to create something interesting to keep people's attention. But ultimately people go and they watch the 3D movie, whatever it might be. Maybe none of us have seen 3D movies, but I don't remember. I didn't see any 3D movies, but it's just not a good example. I heard it was quite boring, though, after. But also, these 3D movies, they were much advertised. I think they spent $1 billion on the Avatar movie. And I know the devotees thought, well, it must be bona fide because it's Krishna conscious, it has the word avatar. But the devotees that I knew of who went to see it, there's a certain thing with 3D, if you look at it, it may give you a headache. Again, you have to wear glasses, I guess. I guess they have to wear glasses. So she got a headache, this particular devotee. So she had to take her glasses off, and it looks worse when you're watching a 3D movie without glasses. And the other said, after a while, it just gets normal. You just get used to it. Just like we're looking all day at 3D, but no one's going to pay us $1 billion to do it. We do a lot better in 3D than these glasses do in the movie. In any case, there is a certain amount of interest they're trying to generate through technology, through computers, faster or more memory or whatever they're doing. Just keep people's attention. Because why are they trying to get people's attention? So they can get their money. And ultimately they can get their obedience and become nice little slaves and do whatever the masters tell us to do. Because we want to do it. Because we're so interested and in love with the service to our masters, we never question because we're just enthralled by their wonderful activities. In any case, everyone's trying to capture our attention by something, by offering some goal that you can, by technology, one day you can see everything going on. You can turn on your computer and see moment to moment everyone's existence, whatever they're doing, whatever they want you to see, and whatever they don't want you to see. Everything will be there. You'll be able to control everything. You'll be able to push a button and immediately out of the wall a pizza will come with olives on it. And 5 types of cheese. Just by pressing the button, it'll just materialize. So that's what people want. They want something interesting, ever new, ever more exciting, and they have limited their conception of reality to technology. They don't believe that there's a God who's doing everything, who has all mystic power, and he shares that power with others. Although we can see to a very small extent, God has already shared that mystic power in that body that we have. Everybody has some mystic power. Mystic power means something we can't explain by our present conception of experience. For instance, if we cut our hand, then even if you don't go to the doctor, because we should clean the cut or whatever else, everything is so contaminated nowadays. But still, the body will heal itself. As a matter of fact, if we go to the doctor, we go into the hospital, we're more likely to get infected by some dangerous disease than if we just stay at home and clean a relatively innocent cut. Because the body has a mystic power to heal itself. And no doctor, no scientist was going to be able to duplicate the mystic power we're already equipped with by Krishna. The scientists, they thought that Darwin thought that the cell was just a little blob with nothing really interesting in it. But actually every cell, there are trillions of cells being created and destroyed at every moment. Each cell is more complicated than one city like New York City with its transportation, its communication, its garbage disposal, its assimilation of nutrients. It's inconceivable how each cell is being formed and how each cell is being destroyed. Everything is actually inconceivable, what's going on. But with our tiny brains, we think we've actually got some conception. But without Krishna consciousness, the whole thing is just, our explanations are just absurd, actually. Especially in modern society, due to atheism, due to lack of connection with Krishna, lack of emitting the source, therefore, with our puny little abilities, we're taking so much credit. But we can hardly do anything. We're so insignificant. someone can, you know, jump in the air and turn around a few times and then land on their feet, they're given a gold medal and everyone wants their autograph. But if we look at, you know, the universe, for instance, someone can juggle five balls up in the air and they give them some credit. Someone can say, take 20 balls and juggle them in the air. And they win some prize. But someone's throwing millions and trillions of universes and juggling them, they never fall down. And what happens? What do? We say, well, that person doesn't exist. Don't listen to anyone. Or if he does exist, that, you know, if we realize it's a person, well, maybe he'll drop one of the universes. Or maybe one day we can juggle it like that too. Just take some practice. People generally, when they see the real mystic power that's going on in the universe, they ignore it. The sun full of infinite effulgence, the eye of the Supreme Lord, exactly in its orbit every day, rising at its appointed time, setting its appointed time, there for everyone to see, and without the sun, no one is going to be able to see very much. And yet, we see it every day, we just ignore it. That's called modern education. To take something so amazing as the sunrise and sunset, to make it ordinary, to dull it so much that the most extraordinary thing we take is ordinary, and the most ordinary things we take is extraordinary. People get more excited when their little baby goes, goo, 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 goo. Wow, look, my baby has so much power. It's certainly going to conquer the 3 blocks on my But when we see the sun rising in the sky, lighting up the whole universe, we say, oh, it's just an accident. The moon rise, oh, another act. Everything's an accident. When my little baby goes, goo goo, see how powerful I am. And my kids are. So this is called misguided intelligence. But when we understand, the closer we get to Krishna, then in every sense we'll become powerful. There's no other way of getting powerful other than getting closer to Krishna. Or hearing from someone who's closer to Krishna and following their instructions. Even the mundane so-called experts, they're expert because Krishna knows the science, he tells someone, and they tell someone else. It is the same principle of the succession. But they wind up doing something completely insignificant and glorifying it as something very important. Someone is able to take a little ball and hit it into a hole. There's a science of how to do it, of how to concentrate, how to become unattached. The people who become expert at sports, they have to become in touch with the super soul. And how to do that? They simply become unattached, without anxiety, without fear, without all the different emotions. They simply become calm, peaceful, in touch with the super soul. And as a result, they hit that little ball into the hole. And they get what they're looking for, fame, fortune, whatever else. But it's tuchava, it's completely insignificant. They've achieved a certain perfection which has no real hope, help for themselves or for others. But because people are mad and crazy, the most insignificant things they take as very significant. And the things that are most significant, if we tell people, you can use the power of human life to go back to the spiritual world and become eternal and feel unlimited happiness and different varieties of pleasure ever increasing. And they think, oh, what a waste of time. I don't have time. I got to hit that little ball into the hole, achieve something important. So that's called Maya. That's the power of the mystic power of Maya. That even in the human form of life, we have a little intelligence. Anyone can understand we're looking for happiness. We're looking for awareness of how to achieve that happiness forever, or at least as long as possible. And when it's offered to us, we can't understand it at all. And those who can't understand it, those who can't appreciate it, they're Bhagyavat. They're fortunate. Everyone else is very unfortunate. Because they're misusing this valuable opportunity to take shelter of Krishna. In a way, they'll achieve everything that they want, and way beyond that, everything they can, we can't even conceive of now, we can achieve. And that will be gradually revealed to us as seriously as we take the process. Of course, we should also appreciate Maya a little bit. We don't want to spend the class praising Maya and glorifying Maya. But Maya is not as insignificant as we may think it is. It is not that Maya was able to capture the mind of Lord Brahma and capture the mind of Lord Shiva at times, and even the minds of all the different living entities throughout millions and trillions of universes. She's quite tricky. Yogat's Chaldi Manasa. We should not underestimate her power, but we should not underestimate Krishna's power either. We may say, well, Maya is too strong, I give up. Yes, Maya is quite strong. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dharate. Because Maya, the police force in the mature world, is empowered by Krishna to give us so many insignificant things. We may progress like Gopakumara from one material situation to the next. This earth planet is really a ridiculous situation. It's so insignificant. We go up to a planet like Indraloka, it may seem completely wonderful, the lifespan, we smell a rose with pure senses, or a lotus flower, and we're overwhelmed with pleasure. Not for a few moments, but for a long time. Everyone there is in the mode of goodness, friendly, beautiful, happy. We become intoxicated by our material experience. And that is insignificant compared to the higher planets like Maharloka, Siddhaloka, Brahmaloka, going through the coverings of the universe, and what to speak of reaching Mahakala, the Brahman effulgence. Completely beyond our conception, how much pleasure, how much illumination, enlightenment is there? It's inconceivable for a puny, insignificant material existence at the present. At every step, easily we can become captivated and think I've reached the goal. Like Gopakumara thought he had reached the goal practically at every stage, although he had reached the goal, fortunately, whatever stage he was at, by the mercy of his meditation on the Gopal mantra. And therefore he never became indifferent to chanting the Gopal mantra, and gradually he realized that there are higher and higher stages of material existence, and he wanted to achieve them. We should learn from Gopakumara not to get allured by material experience, which is just another way, basically speaking. Even when Gopakumara came to the topmost covering, the ethereal covering of the universe that he was in, Maya came as sex personified. I can't explain what that means, I can just repeat it. And she offered him everything, including herself. Almost everything. And he said, well, no. And he left. Doesn't say when he left, but he left. And went into Mahakala Loka. And that was another test of his determination to become finally united after a long, long, long time with Gopal. So we should understand basically it's the same thing as Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Women and wealth, when we say women, we don't just mean women. Women are, men are, for men, women are women. And for women, men are women. Means what you're trying to lord it over. And there's other varieties in Kali Yuga. But whatever you're trying to control in order to enjoy, that's called a woman. It may not even be alive. So that tendency to try to control, to want to control. control of material nature. We can't do it. When we can't do it, then we even become more desires. And there's something I can't do that I really want. If someone says, you can't do this, then the first thing we want to do, that's what we want to do. Just to show them that I'm in control. Because if I don't do it, then I'm a servant. And if I do it, then I've showed them. Break all the rules and regulations just to show I'm independent. I'm God. Don't mess with me. And what do we want to do? We want to enjoy somewhere or another. Enjoy anything, whatever our conception, the mode of goodness or passion or ignorance, to enjoy. The mode of ignorance, enjoy means let me pierce my tongue, my nose, my ears, everything. Decorate my whole body, you know, with 20 different colors, different figures. I want to enjoy. And the passion, let me accumulate, let me show I'm God, bigger house than everyone, more things in it. And in goodness, we want to love everything and everyone in the material world because it makes me feel good. So everyone wants to, according to our mode, our intelligence, or whatever else, we're trying to enjoy the material world. And Krishna, it senses our desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. And he arranges our existence accordingly. But we're fortunate because we can forget the material world if we become conscious of Krishna. Forget the material world means forget the conception that somehow or another there is going to be some arrangement made in the material world, and I'm going to become completely satisfied and happy. I'll finally achieve what I want. We can forget that in the sense that if we remember Krishna, if we become conscious of Krishna, if we set these goals out of our mind, even for a few moments, and just become submissive to the holy name, submissive to Krishna, then we can experience another state of existence, which will change our desire from these desires to achieve some kind of power, because every power in this material world is coming from Krishna, in order to enjoy in some way or another in this material world. We can change to developing the ultimate mystic power by surrendering to the master of mystic power. Yatra yogeshra krishna, yatra partha dhanaradhara, tatra shir vijayo bhutira dhruvam nitya matira mama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of mystic power, wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, certainly there will be victory. We'll actually become victorious over the material nature, over our material consciousness. There'll be victory. There'll be morality. We'll actually do something which is good for ourselves and for others. There'll be opulence, shri, beauty, and there'll be ultimate morality. Therefore, we take shelter of Yogeshwara. As everyone has to take shelter of him if they want to accomplish anything, if we recognize who we're actually taking shelter of, who the real credit belongs to, then the result is we'll get Tam Eva Sharanam Gacha Sarabhave Nabharata Tat Prasadam Param Shanti Sdhanam Prapsi Shastata. Surrender unto him in all respects, Arjuna, because by doing so, you'll attain eternal peace and the supreme. So, thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your lecture. When I listen to classes, like here for example, and I make notes, and then sometimes I read them later, I have noticed that my mind is also creative, but I'm not sure if this what I'm writing is correct, because my mind is always putting some thoughts to that what I have heard. I just don't know what to do with this. How bona fide is then what I have written down?
Well, I think we have to realize that it doesn't really matter how hard we try at the present time. We have a limit to how much we're going to realize what the sound vibration factually represents. Fortunately, we're trying to assimilate the knowledge that Prabhupada has given us in his books. And gradually, as that knowledge is assimilated, as Krishna sees our sincerity and reveals himself, gradually it will become more and more meaningful what we're doing. For instance, if you go to school and you learn, when you look up in the sky, that's called the sun in English. And, or you may call it soul, or you may call it swansa. You may call it so many different things. And therefore, and then they have an explanation. It's made out of hydrogen and oxygen atoms, and it came from the big from nothing, who exploded, became angry, and eventually became a sun. It was so angry. It just so happens when nothing becomes angry, becomes fiery. They have a whole kind of science fiction behind the sun. And we learn it. And then we look at the sun, and that's what we see. It's the science fiction that we've been taught. And we think we're actually looking at the sun. But we're just seeing science fiction that we've been trained up to see. So that's called the modes of information. And we can't see beyond that unless we can take help of someone who has vision beyond that, who has real vision. Because material nature works in two ways, avaratmika shakti and prekatmika shakti, the covering potency and the throwing potency. So we're now covered by different degrees of illusion. And we're only going to see as much as we're able to see according to our particular condition. Now fortunately, we're hearing transcendental knowledge coming into civil succession, which gives us another way of looking at the world. And if we act according to that way, then when Krishna sees that we're sincere, then the Dhani Buddhi Yogam Tam, he encourages us to continue acting in that way and gives us more and more intelligence how to act in devotional service. And as we do that, then Tesham Eva Nukam Bhartam, he becomes very pleased with us and reveals himself. And in the ecstasy of feeling Krishna's happiness and his love, then the result is that the coverings of Maya are gradually dissipated. Just like when you put wood into fire, as the blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, so does the fire of transcendental knowledge burn to ashes the reactions of all previous activities. So as we become ecstatic in love with Krishna, as our coverings are burned away, then we can actually begin to see things and experience things as they really are. As our senses become purified, then we're able to taste things as they are, smell things as they are, see things as they are. Sarva-dvareshu gehesmin prakashamu pajayate gyanadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhyadhy
become illuminated by knowledge. And then we're actually able to understand things correctly. At the present, we should follow the formula by which we please Krishna. The formula means we're trying to assimilate the knowledge so we can apply it in a practical way and desire to utilize our senses in a practical way to please Krishna by performing devotional service. Sadhana bhakti, service to the devotees, and ultimately to also to spread the Sankirtan movement. So if we come away with that conclusion, some realization, how to improve my service, how to come closer, how to act more in the mode of goodness and Krishna consciousness, how to do something which is pleasing to our acharyas and Krishna. If that's our conclusion, we got the right conclusion, and we've realized that we've come a little bit closer to understanding things properly. And if we think that by some intellectual jugglery, I'm going to get closer to what's been spoken or what's been written, then we're just wasting our time. Therefore, ultimately, it's called surrender. surrendering to me and becoming more open and receptive. And part of that means to, when we're using our intelligence, to try, look through the way it's been explained by our previous acharyas and our devotees in different ways, so that Krishna will give us more and more intelligence. So we're not just taking hold of the leg of the elephant, or the trunk of the elephant, or the tail of the elephant. We're actually seeing, putting it together, so we're seeing the whole elephant. And then we can actually see, when we see the whole elephant, that the trunk, the tail, the leg, everything becomes more meaningful to us, because it fits together as a whole. Is that clear?
I hope. Mm-hmm.
Is it clear?
I will try to repeat it, and let's hope it will be.
I said a lot, and you're a translator. In other words, to make it simpler, there's Krishna, there's us, the soul, there's a process of devotional service. So whatever we're hearing in Srimad Bhagavatam and other such literatures, we should not forget that ultimately it's aiming to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, understand that we're His servant and how we can serve Him. If we see everything in the Bhagavatam in that relationship, then we get that broad conception, and we'll be able to fit things in nicely in that conception. And if we forget that, then we'll get lost in the forest of our imaginations. Thank you very much. Grandeur Shimad Bhagavatam.